Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Foreclosure rates across the country have fallen, but they're still on the rise in Franklin County and other areas of Ohio, at least last time we checked. As a result, many are reluctant to purchase homes, despite a high number of new houses and rental units currently under construction. So the result? Picked over apartment complexes, group open houses, and higher rental prices on average. Joining us again to discuss the state of the housing market in Central Ohio is Todd Helpbringer. He's president of Helpbringer Mortgage Services since 2002. And Business First newspaper lists Helpbringer Mortgage Services among the top 25 mortgage companies in Central Ohio. Todd, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you.
Also with us, Rob Vogt. He's a partner at Vogt Santer Insight. It's a national real estate research firm based in Columbus. He is a founding member and past chairman of the National Council of Affordable Housing Market Analysts. It's a group formed to bring standards and professional practices to market feasibility. Welcome back to the show, Rob.
Thank you, Ann.
If you have a question or comment for our guests, if you have sold or bought a house recently, give us a call and tell us how you did it. Inquiring minds want to know. 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org or go to the Facebook page, post your question or comment there. The Dispatch wrote an article recently that talked about the high demand for apartments. There aren't enough to go around. Have you, listeners, have you tried to rent an apartment recently? Have you had a problem finding an apartment? Has your rent gone up? Give us a call, 614-292-8513. So the U.S. Department of Commerce said more homes are being built now than at any time since 2008. That's good. Mm-hmm. I guess someone has some hope. What about in Columbus in Central Ohio? Is that the case here as well?
I mean, I definitely see the purchase market has picked up, but I don't see a lot of the purchase market in new construction. But a lot of the builders have their own financing, so it wouldn't come to me in any way. But I still think there's just a ton of product out there that is, you know, existing homes that people are working through right now. And unfortunately, a lot of it was the foreclosure. So it's hard to gauge, is it new? Is it the existing?
Is it new, or is it new from 2 years ago now?
Correct.
Well, I think there has been a lot of new construction, Todd, that we have seen a lot of pent-up demand for newer units, and there are families there that have put off the buying decision of a new house and are asking now for new construction. And we're seeing the uptick among builders among new homes, which is a great sign. We still have this inventory of unsold homes that exist, plus some of the resales that we need to take care of. But we definitely are seeing an uptick in the real estate market in Central Ohio.
You know who I really feel sorry for are those people that are their houses were the first built on a street and no other houses were ever built there. And I just wonder, is anything ever going to turn around for people like that? Who wants to move into the neighborhood like that?
That's exactly right. That's a tough situation for people to be in, and they will probably be sitting on those homes until the builder comes along and fills out the subdivision. So, you know, that's a strategic decision that a lot of new home buyers need to think about when they're buying a new house. Do I want to be the first one in that subdivision? How many lots exist? How many are unsold? How many other homes have to be built before that subdivision gets built out? Because you really don't want to compete against a brand new house in that same subdivision when you want to try to resell your home.
Yeah, and also make sure there's maybe some diversification with builders there. You don't want to get one builder in one area.
Which could go under.
If he has a problem, he's going to be selling all the different lots. But I agree, it is troublesome to be the first guy in, because if the home values or prices go down, who's going to pick your house when they can build their brand new dream that they desire right down the street?
That's right.
And then there's those neighborhoods where there are so many foreclosures. Who wants to move into one of those where the grass is overgrown half the time and the houses aren't being taken care of?
And that's a pretty tough thing to do for existing or people looking in neighborhoods. How many houses are actually in foreclosure in my neighborhood? And that should be a decision that they make when they're trying to decide, am I going to buy this house in this neighborhood or am I going to be competing with foreclosures in a couple of years? So that's another tough decision they have to make.
We're talking about the Central Ohio real estate market. Questions or comments for our guests, Rob Vogt, partner of Vogt Santer Insight, and also Todd Helpbringer, president of Helpbringer Mortgage Services. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So foreclosure rates, as I mentioned earlier, have fallen nationally. Again, they're not going away. They're just rates have fallen. It's all relative. But Franklin County in Ohio, they're on the rise. Why is that? Do we know?
I really don't know. I would think the foreclosure ratios are going to drop regardless, because you only have so much product out there. And ultimately, you know, once they get sold, that one's going to be taken off the market. We talked earlier about the properties that may be deemed unsellable, meaning that they've got a mold problem, a water problem, a structural problem. I don't know what they plan on doing with those homes. I mean, if they're deemed uninhabitable, it's best for the banks is to take it on and destroy them.
Right. I mean, isn't there a certain point where if I was just a homeowner, a property owner, and my property was deemed uninhabitable, wouldn't the health department, the local health department come in and say, you either have to fix it up or tear it down or do something with it? But why don't banks have to take care of their property the way the rest of us do?
Well, I think they have to, but I think the problem is that they're not aware of the situation. They're not always sending out inspectors to get into those houses to look at them to see what the problem is. So I think part of it is a staffing issue, which is one of the reasons we're seeing the foreclosure rate beginning to increase again in Ohio is the fact that they had such a backlog of the initial foreclosure process that now they're getting caught up and they're saying, oh, wait a minute, we've got some other folks here that are behind. Let's start to go after them.
I go back to that same comment that, again, back in those home ownership days for everybody, the banks never had a contingency plan. I mean, that's why they're not looking after their properties. They never had a plan for disaster.
But it's been 4 years now.
I agree. And I don't understand it. I don't understand how they do not either secure the property and see if they can get a tenant in the property. It's better than seeing it just, you know, people get breaking in, stealing, you know, items out of the house and just having it go to crap. I mean,
well, you know, Todd, I think one of the problems has been is that historically that most of the recessions that we went through, we came out of it fairly quickly. And I think a lot of lenders were relying on that fact that we were going to come out of this fairly quickly, that our housing problem was going to correct itself, and it hasn't.
Well, the housing problem was the cause of it.
Well, that's right. That's
which is a big difference.
That's right. That's
for
right.
For many of them.
Exactly. So it's I think they're trying to play catch up at this point. We talked about that previously, that they're understaffed. The enormity of the problem was underestimated, and they're having all kinds of problems just getting caught up.
You know, coupled with the insecurity of buying, is a new trend of moving inside the Beltway, inside into the center cities. And people said 10 years ago, they'll never fill those apartments downtown, they'll never fill those condos, and now there's a shortage.
That's right. It's an amazing change that we have seen over the past 10 years. You know, the rental market in Central Ohio and in many markets across the country is the best it's ever been in 25 years.
That's where there's building.
That's right. And we see just so many young people today that are saying, I am not going to get involved with home ownership. We shared that article with you about the amount of student debt that they have that's not able to get them to qualify.
Yeah, talk about that. Why does student debt come into play?
Well, I think, Todd, you could probably speak to that better, that they have to qualify for a mortgage.
I mean, qualifying for a mortgage. And again, I'm very happy that there was an uprise of condos being built and rent. But I think also the misnomer that some clients have is how much down payment is necessary. You know, really, you can get in with good credit. That means credit scores above 700. You can get in with 3% down and do a 30-year fixed. Now, again, it does require some savings. But that's why I always kind of tell someone, if you're planning on buying a house in the next 6 months or 12 months, meet with us. You know, or meet with a bank. Try to get a game plan ahead of what you can say.
That should be the first thing you do.
Yeah, get yourself prepared for success. You know, meet with someone, see what your credit scores are like, see how much assets you have, see where you want to live at, because there are a lot of opportunities out there for the single family market too. And so, but I think the misnomer is I have to have 20% down, and that is not the case at all. You can do as little as 3%.
Are you seeing many first-time single-person buyers? Because that's one of the things that we're seeing in apartments today is an awful lot of single-person households, and that's one of the fastest growing segments of the population is one person household. So a lot of people don't want to get into that home ownership situation because they will like the flexibility that apartments can provide, the fact that they can close up and go someplace for the weekend and not have to worry about cutting the grass or cleaning out the gutters. It's a lifestyle change now that we're beginning to see, and people like the idea of moving downtown and having all the activities that we have going on down there and the arts. So it's a fundamental lifestyle change that we're seeing that we didn't see 10 years ago in downtown.
Yeah, I would agree. That's definitely – the downtown is a nice place to be. It's a lot more exciting than it was 10 years ago. I agree 100%. I do see, though, we have a mix. We have a lot of single people still buying the houses, but we have a lot of couples. And I agree that the rent size keeps your options open, that if you have a year lease, you can get out of it and move into a house at that time, or if your needs change, move rather quickly. Whereas if you have a home, either you have to fit that other person in the house with you or sell it, then you get the whole issue of the massive amount of properties that are on the market right now.
Well, then the other decision has to be made by that single person on whether they take on a spouse or a partner and whether or not they're going to like that location or not. So there are some challenges, I think, being a single person home buyer. But and again, that's why we're seeing so many people gravitating towards apartments again.
Yeah, all of it, it's just there's a combination of so many factors taking place, fundamental changes in where we decide we want to live and how we want to live our lives, when people are getting married, when they're deciding to have children. Those are two big triggers for buying homes and settling down, and those are happening later and later.
That's right.
For a lot of people across the board.
And plus, we have a lot of baby boomers who are making that same decision. I have talked to a number of older households where people have said, I'm selling the house, I'm going to move into an apartment. A three-bedroom apartment with two baths, and that community has a wonderful community room that has an exercise facility, an outdoor swimming pool, a breakfast bar in the lounge area. I mean, those are amenities that are tough to match when you buy a single-family house. So developers are recognizing that not only is the Generation Y, the 20-year-olds that are looking for these types of amenities, but the older adult as well, the empty nesters who are looking to move into these really well-appointed apartment properties around Columbus.
And hopefully we'll get back to where, if it's leaning more heavily into the apartments, we get that happy medium mix. Because if all of a sudden if we start overbuilding the apartments, I feel we're going to be back to what we just did with the housing. It's like we've got to have some balance, if you
will.
That's
right. Yeah, well, that's inevitable, Todd. Yeah. We have historically gone through that up and down trend in Columbus. And
that's the free market system, right?
That's right. That's right.
Is if you build them soon enough, you get
they will
you
come.
Win.
They will come. Right.
If you wait too long, you lose.
That's right. Well, I think some of our recent statistics show that we've got over 5,000 apartments right now that are in the pipeline. That's a huge number for Columbus, and will clearly lead to some vacancies in some areas of town and probably some apartment deals someplace. But that's down the road a ways.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the real estate market and real estate rental market in Central Ohio. My guests are Rob Vogt, partner of Vogt Santer Insight. It's a national real estate research firm, is based in Columbus. And Todd Helpbringer, president of Helpbringer Mortgage Services. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. We're especially interested if you've bought or sold a house recently, how you did it, what kind of process you went through, how you planned, how you prepared. Give us a call, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org or go to our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Wade Goodwin. Coming up on the next On Point, the campaigns and dark money groups are spending a whole lot of money to target each of us on our computers. Different voter, different message. Is this a good thing? That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
On Point this afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. It's 80 degrees in downtown Columbus with partly sunny skies. Expect a high near 90 for today. Partly cloudy for tonight, a low of 66 degrees. Mostly sunny with a chance of showers and thunderstorms for Tuesday afternoon, just about a 30% chance, and a high of 92. Partly cloudy with a chance of rain continuing Tuesday night, a low of 69. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We are talking about the real estate and rental housing market in Central Ohio and Columbus with Rob Vogt, partner of Vogt Santer Insight, and also Todd Helpbringer of Helpbringer Mortgage Services. Questions or comments are welcome. Are you thinking about selling? Are you thinking about buying? Give us a call and talk about it. 614-292-8513. And Bill and Powell, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Good morning. We're going to list our house next May 1st because of the pool in the backyard. And the question is, I've authorized our realtor to perhaps look for someone this year without listing. Is it better to sell this year or next year?
I think it's a great time to sell whenever you can get the price you desire and the buyer. I mean, why not put your toe in it right now? This pool probably still looks fantastic.
It does, but if it doesn't, if it's not ready to sell, my point, I didn't tell you this, we've got to fix some things up, you know, to get it ready for May. If they buy it this year, it's going to be as is, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, the point Todd made is that he's absolutely right. If you can find a buyer who's willing to accept it at the price you're looking for, that's a great point. If you look at some of the national trends, though, and Zillow came out recently and indicated that Central Ohio is actually going to see a decline in home values of another 1.1%. Over the next year. So, you know, we're still not out of this trough yet that we've been in for the past couple of years. And so I guess if you look at the big picture, it probably makes some sense to wait.
Great. Thank you so much.
All right, Bill, thanks for the call. 614-292-8513. If you have a question or comment, we welcome them.
I was going to make another comment for Bill. You know, the thought being, we talked about this a couple shows ago, is that If your house is not ready to be shown, it's like I'd struggle between doing it or not doing it, because if someone goes in there and sees this is wrong, they're just going to start knocking the price, and then saying, well, I've got to fix it myself, or I've got to do this. Mm-hmm. I struggle with, you may not want to put it on the market until it shows as you
That's
like
right.
it.
That's right. That's something we did talk about, Todd, that make sure it's the best possible face that you can put forward. And I think a house starts to get a reputation that, you know, it's got all these problems with it. I don't even want to look at it. Don't even show it to me. Mm-hmm.
Most people want turnkey.
Yep.
They figure if it's been on the house for 6 months, there must be been on the market for 6 months, there must be something wrong with it.
Plus, they're competing with new houses, that, mm-hmm. that you get a brand new house without any of those problems and not have to put up with the hassle.
Yep.
Steve in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Yes, good morning. There's German Village, Italian Village, Victorian Village. Why can't Columbus have a Mexican Village with shops and bars and everything?
Hmm. Do you have a location for Mexican Village?
I would say Franklinton.
But isn't there usually some basis in reality when they make a village up like that?
Yes, there is. But,
okay.
Wouldn't you like to go to a Mexican neighborhood with bars and shops and everything on a Friday night?
It'd be a great idea if with the city making its big initiative in Franklinton, contact the city or the Franklinton Development Association. I'm sure they'd like to hear that story about giving it some identification.
And there's a lot of abandoned houses that they could rehab, sell them a house for a dollar and watch it be brought up to standards in less than a year.
Is it that simple?
No.
Okay, you go off and dream away, Steve. Thanks for the call, Steve.
Bye.
Take care. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Anne in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, yes. I have a house that I cannot sell. The market's tough, as we know. I almost am at the point where I have to put it up for land contract. What is the number one thing I do not want to do when I land contract? What are the downfalls of that?
I think with the land contract, you know, getting a qualified person in there that maybe, I would say a couple things. Check the credit, see what kind of creditworthiness they have. Maybe do a land contract with a future purchase date for yourself.
Yes.
But also interview them and make sure you feel that they're going to keep the property in as good a shape and as good a condition as you do. Because what you don't want to do is when that land contract expires and they don't perform, you've got a disaster on your hands.
That's a great point, Todd, that all of a sudden you now are becoming a landlord and all the problems that go along with it. And we know how tough it is sometimes to manage property. So that's a great point. Make sure it's in great condition and document that condition before that buyer moves into that house.
So all the legal rights that are set up for a contract on the land contract, it's pretty much an airtight situation as far as the contract that you set up when they move in.
I would definitely spend a few dollars to hire an attorney to make sure you've got that kind of agreement. Those aren't readily available, and I think they do need to be custom designed for the specific property that you're dealing with.
Okay. Do you recommend it?
I mean, I think for the right person, it may give you the opportunity to, you know, move on into a new house right now because you can't sell it. Now, I guess the question is, do you need the equity out of your home for you to move on to your next property?
I do.
Okay, so that really doesn't solve what you're looking to do ultimately, because you're just going to prolong, you know, you don't have to move out. You've got somebody in there. You still can't, you know, get to your equity.
Right. Oh, I see. Well, actually, what the problem is I have a loan against it. Can you land contract if you have a loan against your home?
Sure.
Because you
ultimately, you're responsible for that property. the lender won't acknowledge that you did a land contract. They're going to know that you signed personally for it, so they're going to hold you liable.
I see.
Yes.
Okay. I thank you so much. Have
okay,
a good Ann, day.
You too.
Take care, Ann. Mark in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Welcome.
Hi. So my friend and I, given the fact that the rental market is so good, we were thinking about starting kind of a small part-time business that might eventually grow into a full-time business, basically buying up nicer properties in the Franklin neighborhood and fixing them up and then renting them out either to, you know, single families or renting them out, you know, like college student style, like where there'd be multiple roommates sharing a single house. And I was just wondering what some of the legalities are regarding that, like what kinds of legal contracts or licenses or things like that we would have to worry about if we were gonna pursue that.
I don't think there's any really formal licensing process that you have to go through. You become the legal owner of that property, and you have the right to either rent it out or live in it yourself. Franklin County does have a rental registration requirement, but that's simply going online and registering your rental unit online. So there aren't really any formal contracts that you have to worry about. Get your property, fix it up, make sure the lender knows that you're going to rent it and not be a owner-occupant. But beyond that, that's all you need to get started in the rental business.
You know, okay.
And a lot of those properties, Mark, you know, you're going to have to, if they're not inhabitable, as we talked about earlier, a lot of that financing you'll have to provide yourself. So you
right.
have to maybe buy it for cash, fix it up for cash. Now, the one caveat that's come about, a lot of lenders now, before you can do permanent financing and take some cash out, it's usually a year and one day. They have a new thing called seasoning. So be cautious of how much capital you throw in, because it may be a year before you could pull it back out.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's something you got to maybe preserve that capital and see how much fix-ups you have to do.
Once again, maybe go ahead of time and talk to the lender.
Right.
How long will it be? And prepare.
Yes, correct. Prepare yourself.
All right. Mark, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye-bye. If you have a question or comment for our guest, Rob Vogt, partner of Vogt Santer Insight. It's a national real estate research firm based in Columbus. And also Todd Helpbringer, president of Helpbringer Mortgage Services. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. So we have an email from Angela. She says, I have lived in my house for 4 years. I bought it when interest rates were high, so I pay 6.1%. I tried to call and refinance, but my mortgage company says I don't have enough paid into the house's equity to refinance. Mm-hmm. But I keep getting letters in the mail to refinance from other institutions. Should I wait out my present company for a year or two when I have the right amount of equity, or should I shop around? Todd?
Well, I think, two thoughts. Anytime someone sends you solicitation in the mail, I'd pitch it. I would just pitch it, because their interests are about themselves on that, and that just makes me nervous. I think equity position, you have to have at least 5% equity to refinance. I don't know what your equity position is. You know, if you want to give me a call, I can go over some ideas, but that's going to be a caveat. You're going to have a problem with that unless you go back to your lender. If they've already said no, then unfortunately you're kind of between a rock and a hard place. If you don't have the equity there, you're just kind of stuck right now.
So the lender has determined, I guess, that her house value hasn't changed or actually has gone down, and perhaps potentially she may be underwater with the mortgage.
She could be. And I wonder how far along in the process they are, if they've done the appraisal. Because ultimately,
right.
if you're just talking to somebody and this is their best guess, you know, if she has some comparables in the area that show a higher value, it may be worth just trying. I always tell clients that if you want to see what the house is valued at, I mean, I know we all want to be conscientious of the cash, but a credit report and appraisal, you know, in Franklin County, you're out $341 and you can find out what's the name of the game. I always throw out a suggestion that if she's close on equity, there's always a suggestion that you can get a gift from a family member to maybe make up the difference for that 5% position. There's always some opportunity out there. Maybe mom, dad, brother, sister could gift you some money.
And once again, would you advise her to shop around anyway?
I mean, I would say talk to a couple different lenders. I mean, but I think if she doesn't have the equity, it kind of is what it is.
Right, it is what it is. But ultimately, when it comes time to refinance, you want to look around a little
That's
bit.
That's right. And she really needs to know what the value.
Half a point here, half a point there.
She needs to know what the value of that house is and what her mortgage balance is. That's going to be the two key numbers they're going to ask about.
Yep.
Ron in Pickerington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Ron.
Good morning. My question is, my wife and I recently bought a house here in Pickerington, and for reasons, we're moving on moving in about three years, and we wanted to know how long is it taking in this market for a house to sell?
Well, I mean, each market's a little bit different, but I mean, I think 3 years is a pretty tight time frame even to get your equity out, or even to get, you know, based on what the appreciation rate is right now, the commissions you may have to pay to the realtor, et cetera. Rob, you had something?
I have that exact number. The number of days, according to the multiple listing service of the Columbus Board of Realtors, is 97 days for a house in Central Ohio, which is actually down from 101 days in 2011.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
That's an average number, though. Keep that
in mind. Thanks, Ron. Thanks for the call. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the real estate market and the rental real estate market in Columbus and Central Ohio. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513. We have an email from Chris. Writes, I have a question about renting as opposed to selling. The good news is there are still some good deals for buyers. The bad news is sellers may need to sell lower than they would prefer. Assuming one could buy a home without selling the house one already lives in, how might one decide when renting the original home is preferable to selling it?
I would think, you know, if you look at your debt-to-income ratios, if you've already got the assets to move forward with another down payment, just try to cover the monthly mortgage and maybe a little bit extra for incidentals. I would think that would make sense for you. Cover your mortgage payment, get a good, solid, at least 12-month lease, check out that client, see what their credit score is, and just do interview them. Because the ultimate thing, even back to, I think it was Ann, make sure the client that's going to be renting your property will take as good care of it as you do. So in 12 months, you don't have now $2,000, $5,000 of fix-ups.
That's a great point. Yep. Yeah.
George and Hilliard, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, George.
Look, I'm enjoying this show greatly, but you know, there's so much sweetness and light being talked about buying into it. I just wanted to throw in my experience as a renter. My wife and I retired. Okay, we were able to sell our home. We didn't bite the bullet. We got our money out of it and a good profit too. But now we're renting, and we're looking at, for the last 2 years, increases of last year 10% and this year 15%, which is, you know, ridiculous.
But is it happening all over the place like that, Rob Vogt?
We aren't seeing those rates of increase in every market, but we will begin to see more aggressive increases in rent across the board. That's a bit of an anomaly to see that kind of rent increase. The good thing is that, as I mentioned earlier, that we've got so much product in the pipeline that potentially we will see some of those rates level off. The rate of increase will level off over time. It's awfully tough to rent, and it would be tough for that renter right now to get out there and find a new unit or another unit to move into. They're just not that readily available. But I think, again, our supply will catch up with our demand over the next couple of years, so hang in there.
Okay, George, take care. Thanks for the call. Nikki in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Nikki.
Good morning, or almost afternoon, I guess. Mm-hmm. I have a question. We are landowners or homeowners or whatever, and we have a 4-unit, and we would like to get rid of or ask one of our tenants to leave. Do we have to give them a reason? Can we just give them, I'd like to be nice and give them 60 days. Do I have to only give 30 or?
Well, it would be specified by, I think, the contract, your rental agreement that you have with them. Have they lived there for over a year?
Yes, and they're not on a current lease.
Okay,
they're month to month.
That's right. So you're month to month right now. So, yeah, I think you have the right to ask them to leave the premises. Give them a 60-day notice to vacate, and, you know, I think you're within your legal rights.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, Nikki. Take care.
Bye.
Bye. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Last week, Franklin County approved the sale of the downtown Cooper Stadium for $3.4 million, finally.
Yep.
What's the commercial real estate market like in Columbus? I mean, is the sale of Cooper Stadium a sign that the market is on the rise? Is this good for the area when something like that happens? Or does it completely shake everything up?
I think it's definitely good for the area, especially, you know, in that area right there immediately. But I think commercial market is still very active. I was telling Rob earlier that part of our company, we do multifamily apartment financing, and we have not we've never been this busy on that stuff. We had huge projects that have come through in the month of July and August that will close. We're also doing a lot of owner-occupant small commercial buildings. So a lot of that's going on. Some of the stuff, believe it or not, is even short sell on these units, which is hard to believe. Like, whole complexes are being short sold. And they make money, which I don't quite understand how that's happening.
Explain what a short sale is.
Basically, the bank is accepting the purchase of the property for less than what it's owed. They may be owed, let's say, $1 million, and they'll accept $900,000 or $800,000.
Do you have any sense, Todd, of how many of those the sales that we have are short sales? Any percentage?
I think the last, let's say, like the last eight closings we've had with that is maybe one or two. Mm-hmm. So it's still a lot of them. It's more than I've seen in a long time. You usually don't see apartment complex, especially when the apartment complex, when you look at the performance numbers, it makes money. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why the owner is all of a sudden just giving it back. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
So
they're just not crossing their T's and dotting their I's somewhere else in business,
right?
Probably. So when something like the Cooper Stadium thing does happen, though, is this all good, or is there a delay as far as what it means for an area and the property values?
Well, that area of Franklin County has always it has struggled for years, mm-hmm. and I'm not so sure that that's a picture of what the larger commercial real estate market looks like in Columbus. I think it's certainly, depending on your perspective, good news for that neighborhood to actually see something being done and potentially an employment generator for that area, along with some sort of stimulus to create some of the other businesses that might locate there because of its future potential use. I think that's an isolated incident that doesn't necessarily translate, though, into the larger picture of commercial real estate in Columbus, although I think our commercial real estate market is really on the upswing at this point.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's maybe it's just one area right there. It's not going to reach all areas.
Right.
Email from Daniel wants to know how to go about becoming a real estate agent full-time in Ohio. Just pass a test, right?
Just go. Yeah, I think you can go to Honduras, and just take the real estate license.
And then you have to work under a broker.
Yeah, for a year or something like that. Yeah,
a couple of years, yeah.
It's pretty simple. When you say Honduras.
Honduras College, right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You can do all your education right there.
All right, Daniel. There you go. Answer to your question. If you have a question or comment, you can email us, as Daniel did, at allsides@wosu.org. You can call us, as Alex has, and we'll get to that call when we return. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
The new HBO documentary About Face features supermodels of the past, reflecting on their careers and on aging. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Beverly Johnson, the first African-American woman to be on the cover of Vogue, and Carol Alt, who's been on over 500 covers, and director Timothy Greenfield Sanders, who's photographed everyone from Barbara Bush to porn stars. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes starting at noon on 89.7 NPR News. And when you support 89.7 NPR News at the annual level of $85, our gift to you is the WOSU Public Media Member Card. The Member Card is good for dining and admission discounts at more than 300 Member Card partners in and around Central Ohio. Save money and support 89.7 NPR News with the Member Card. Make a gift of $85 or more. Visit us now at WOSU.org/membercard for more information. And join us tomorrow for All Sides with Ann Fisher at 10 o'clock. It's an inside look at the commercial airline industry. And then Tech Tuesday. That's All Sides from 10 until noon tomorrow. 82 degrees in downtown Columbus. Partly sunny skies today, warming up to a high near 90. Partly cloudy for tonight, a low of 66. Sunshine with a chance of afternoon rain on Tuesday, a high of 92. All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
My guests, Rob Vogt, partner of Vogt Santer Insight. It's a national real estate research firm based in Columbus. And also Todd Helbringer, president of Helbringer Mortgage Services. They are back on the show today to talk about the real estate market in Central Ohio and Columbus. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Alex in Worthington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Alex.
Thank you. We are having a debate in the family of do we sell the cottage up on Lake Erie? That's number one. And number two, if we decide we do want to sell it, is it better to wait until spring? We understand that's the hot time to sell. Or do we try to sell it now if we decide to sell it?
Well, I think that one of the things that your family probably has to do is how much do they want the cottage? I mean, that's the very first question that needs to be answered.
Yeah, we're going through that debate now.
Okay.
We have our little grid mapping out the pros and cons of keeping it. I'm sure other people that are empty nesters are going through similar discussions.
Well, I think that what our research has shown recently is that second homes has been a really tough sell. If the primary house has been a tough sell, the second home or the vacation home has been particularly difficult to sell at this point. I would strongly recommend that, as Todd has pointed out earlier, that that house or cottage get ready to be shown, and probably the best time would be to start in early spring to market that that cottage, and hopefully the conditions will improve. But I would expect that you are going to have a, depending on obviously where it's located and its condition, it's going to be a tough sell to get somebody to take a look at second homes right now.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Alex.
All right. Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye. 614-292-8513 if you have a question or comment about real estate. An email from Arlen. He writes, my wife and I have been kicking around the idea of buying either a house or a condo. We want city services like water, gas, and broadband. What advantage, if any, is there to in buying a freestanding home in a subdivision versus a condo community, given all the crazy rules, HOAs, I guess that's
Homeowners Associations.
Yeah. Right, having subdivisions nowadays. It seems to defeat the purpose of owning a home if you can get busted for growing fruits or vegetables in your own yard.
I mean, I would agree the condo scene, there is definitely more decks and bylaws of a condo project. But also, I think, you know, in my opinion, the single family homes typically, take out these last 10 years or so, have appreciated better than a condo. You know, but if you get a nice condo subdivision that the, you know, they keep it under control, they don't let a bunch of renters come in there, it's owner occupants, you know, you tend to go and do better there than you would be with a heavy rented apartment complex.
The other point is lifestyle. That's a lifestyle choice that if you are seeking a lifestyle in which you don't have a lot of maintenance, that you could close up that unit and take off to when you want to, versus owning a house that clearly has a lot of other responsibilities with it. So I think I would, as a starting point, begin to talk about or think about what is my lifestyle and how do I want to live my life.
Yep.
Interesting email from Tiffany. I hadn't heard about this. What is your take, she writes, on companies that offer to help you rent your home in exchange for your purchasing a brand new MI home? They send the rent to you and get a fee from MI. Have you heard about that?
I've not heard of that at all.
I've heard of it. I don't know the details of that program, Ann. It sounds like you can't go wrong with it if it's efficient rental income to cover the cost of your mortgage.
And I guess the idea is, the question is, what if the home isn't renting? Do the paychecks stop? And how does that work?
That's right. What kind of guarantees do you have? I certainly would understand all those details before I committed to a program like that.
Yeah, because you wonder if that person moves out, what is it? They're going to start clawing back to you, everything else.
So now you have two houses.
Right.
John in Clintonville, you're on the air. You want to respond to the caller who is asking about vacating a tenant. Welcome to the show, John.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as a landlord, I just wanted to piggyback off of that phone call a couple of phone calls ago, and that the language, when you give a notice to vacate a premise, the language has to be very specific by law, I guess, by the state of Ohio, especially if you anticipate an eviction. If you don't say the exact right words, you know, then your initial notice won't be recognized by the courts. So, you know, to that previous caller, you know, she might want to Google Ohio vacate the notice. Because the language just has to be very specific.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I think I would follow that advice. Or if you can, get an attorney involved.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Enjoy the show.
Thank you, John. Thanks for listening. Email from Dave. He says, your guests previously suggested a homeowner obtain an appraisal for their home before deciding whether to list it for sale or refinance a loan with a bank. To avoid the cost of a second appraisal during the refinance, where can a homeowner obtain an appraisal that will also be accepted by the bank for a refinance?
Well, the appraiser that you're going to have to use has to be licensed in the state of Ohio and have E&O insurance. But a lot of times, if they're going to go out and do it, make sure they do it for a bank. A lot of times the appraisers, I'll use the word like a divorce appraisal, where they'll go out there and say, I think the value is X, but not have the supporting data, you know, the comps and things like that. I mean, just let the appraiser know up front what you need. I may be using this for a mortgage company. Will you assign it to the mortgage company? Typically, if you have it assigned to the mortgage company, we're still going to have the appraiser go back out there and research the value, because we can't have your application date be after the appraisal's already been done.
Mm-hmm.
So, or especially before the appraisal's been done. So,
when somebody goes out then to ask for that appraisal, Todd, does it make sense to ask for what that update fee would cost?
Yeah, you might ask them. I typically see that between $75 and $100.
Okay.
To so update it's the appraisal and put it in the bank's name.
The larger amount. Okay. Julie and Hilliard, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Julie.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, Ann.
You're welcome.
My youngest is graduating from high school in 2 years, and I'm planning on selling my home in the suburbs at that point and downsizing. And so I would like your folks' advice on what to do in the meantime in those 2 years that I have to kind of get things ready to go. At the point that I sell or that I plan on selling, the house will be 14 years old, and I have been the sole owner. And I'll take my comments off the air.
Okay. Thank you, Julie.
Thanks.
Well, I think, as we have continued to point out, making sure that that house is ready to sell in the best possible condition is the strategy that we would follow. I think, if you have 2 years to do it, I think I would list out those tasks that need to be completed to get that house ready to sell, probably take care of some of the larger tasks this year, and then sort of finish up with the details next year. And I think you'll be ready to sell once you've addressed all those issues.
How much do you advise people really go to town when it comes to getting the house ready? In other words, should you get the kitchen a year before you're going to sell the house?
I mean,
unless you're loaded.
It's 14 years old.
Yeah.
If it's 14 years old, I mean, as long as everything is still functional and nothing's outdated, if she's gone real strong colors, maybe neutralize everything. But if not, I think just making, paint and carpet, if it's tile, make sure it's, nice order and fashion, the exterior, the paint, the trim, things like that. I think she'll be okay. If the house was 40 years old and she hasn't touched it at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's...
landscaping is one of those things that takes a few months to sort of catch up, that mm-hmm. that you don't want to go to a house that they've just thrown some new mulch on the garden and that's the end of it. That takes some time to sort of mature and age a little bit. So that's one of the things I think I would start working on immediately, is to get that landscaping up so that the street appeal is strong.
Debbie in Grove City, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Debbie.
Hi, thank you. My question is, I bought my house about 3 years ago. I put $20,000 down on it, and I went to go get a $10,000 home equity loan, and they said the value of my house has dropped to the point where I don't have enough equity. And I'm pretty disappointed in that. I live in a nice neighborhood, and I was just wondering, are we going to see some values go back up, or have I just pretty much lost the $20,000 I put down?
Well, I think time is going to probably take care of that problem for you. I mean, historically, we all talk about how real estate values have increased over time. I mentioned earlier in the program that Zillow has actually forecasted another 1% decline in Central Ohio home values, which is probably either a decline or at least staying steady. But I think over the long run, you will recover that lost equity through house appreciation. And if you can stay there and your housing situation doesn't need to change, I think you'll be able to benefit from that over time.
Yeah, I agree. Just continue to pay down the mortgage and hope the value will come back up for you. Yeah,
that's what I'm doing. Is it going to happen, the next year or two, or is it going to be another 10?
It won't be tomorrow. It probably won't be next month. It probably won't be next year. We'll probably begin to see some real appreciation in 3 to 5 years from now.
3 to 5 years. Yeah. Okay. All right,
Debbie.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. Take care. We still have a few minutes left. There's no calls waiting, so if you want to put your call in now, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your question or comment there for our guests. sometimes people don't understand what they're getting into when they decide to buy a house. We've kind of been talking around that a little bit. You know, you have to decide, is it smarter for you to go into a condo or where you're, it's very structured and they're telling you what you have to do and you know everything up front, or go into an apartment where you're just paying your rent and you don't have to worry about anything, all things being equal. What are some of the common mistakes people make about home ownership, and where are the greatest burdens that they don't think about?
I think the approach I usually take is that the lenders have certain ratios of debt to income that they want a client to be within. But once we show the client this is what that is showing, how does that make you feel? How does that payment feel in your monthly budget? I'm huge into that, because ultimately once the loan closes, whether you can qualify for the loan based on the lender's guidelines, if it's uncomfortable, you're not going to like living there. And second, I think one of the other things is save. Have more cash reserves. So if you have the incidentals, when you get into a house, there are so many things you're going to have to purchase that you just don't think about, in the upkeep and the maintenance. So just continue to think about those things. But I'm huge on living amongst your means and having a nice set of cash reserves after closing.
On the actual lifestyle piece of it, Todd, I think the other piece is that so many times people, when they move into a house, they think that's the last thing I need to do. I don't have to fix the roof. I don't have to do the gutters. I don't have to paint. I don't have to repair the plumbing. The reality is you got a lot of tasks that you have to do to maintain that house. And I think especially among some new home buyers, they don't realize, or first-time home buyers, they don't realize how much work a house really takes to maintain it over time.
And the most expensive stuff, you can't see what it looks like.
That's right.
Gutters, nobody goes, hey, see those new gutters you just got, purchased some new gutters.
That's right.
No one's complimented me on those gutters yet.
Yeah. No house value improvement.
Yeah, it's like, it did do a thing for the otherwise the image of the house, but
those are things probably you say. You have to continue to do those things. Yeah, absolutely.
And then if you want to have a heart attack, think that your air conditioning is broken when actually your husband's turned it off and you didn't know that. There you go. Carl and Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I just feel that your guests are overly optimistic about the recovery. It seems, I was looking at some graphs that the housing prices seem to follow the unemployment rate pretty much, and it looks like that it's getting worse instead of better. People just can't afford to buy homes now, and what I've been hearing is looking for them to decrease by a significant amount.
Even more?
Yeah, I'm just curious why they have this optimistic...
I was reporting what the Zillow report that came out indicating that it was a 1% decline. I was looking over again some of the Columbus Board of Realtor numbers, and we've actually seen an average price increase of 6.6% year over year average in the average sale of a house. So at least from that standpoint, we are seeing some some increasing price in terms of home sales. But it's going to be a long road to recovery, and I don't think we should overstate that point.
Do you see them falling more, the prices, before that recovery?
We do, and I think Zillow's point, another decline of 1% over the next
1%.
Year. Yeah.
Well, that sounds optimistic to me, but thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, thanks, Carl. I mean, you know, there's good reason to be skeptical, given what we've gone through the last 4 years.
No question.
So I go back to looking at the clientele that we have. I mean, we're busy with a lot of stuff, a lot of the purchases going on right now. So, I mean, I'm sure there's pockets of you know, home ownership and home growth, but also there's some laggers. I'm definitely positive that.
Email from Robin. I would like to put my house on the market next year, but I'm worried I can't sell it without taking a loss. What about renting for a few years? Is this a good idea as an alternative? And what would be a good resource to learn about renting out a primary home?
If you can afford to rent, that you don't need, as Todd has pointed out, the equity to buy another house, it's definitely a strategy worth pursuing. Some of the rental rates that we've seen for single-family houses have been quite strong, especially with the number of families who've been displaced through the foreclosure process, that they are looking for quality homes in neighborhoods. So I think it's a very good strategy.
Okay. James in Dublin, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, James.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I got two questions. One is, in the subdivision I live in, two houses have recently sold, and they're both slated to be burned down by the fire department for firefighting practice. And I'm curious, is there some sort of a tax advantage to doing that to tear down a house? And the other one is, I too am really skeptical about the housing market for two reasons. One is, there's talk about the mortgage interest tax shield going away, And the second one is interest rates are at like historically low rates now, and they're probably not going any lower. So if anything, they're going to go up. And both of those things would put downward pressure on housing prices. I'll take answers off the air.
Thanks, James.
I think on your first question about the tax incentive, I'm sure there is a tax incentive. I don't know what that is, but donate your house to the city of Columbus. There probably is one. And then to talk about with historical low rates, you know, I agree, James. I was telling Rob earlier, my biggest concern with the low interest rates we have right now is what will the ramifications be in the future? You know, ultimately, these rates are going to have to go up at some point in time. So with that thought, I recommend everybody get into a fixed rate, whether it be 15, 20, or 30 years. Do not take an adjustable rate now. It is not the time to do that. And then just, you know, the banks, my concern with the banks are, as these rates go up, if there's not enough new product that they're going to be financing, these homes will be deemed underwater. And that's when banks are getting into some problems. And, you know, everyone says, you know, who cares about these banks? We need to break them up as it is. We want banks to be profitable. We want banks to make money, because when they make money, they can lend more money. When they can't lend money, we all have problems. But that's kind of my comments about that, James.
I can't imagine the politicians over the next couple of years would tackle this interest deduction issue. I think that'll be around. But I can understand the skepticism that most listeners have regarding the home buyer market, that it is soft, and we've seen home values decline. And you know, what do we have on the horizon that's going to tell us that that's actually going to increase over the short term?
Which is why I start the whole program out by saying, if you love where you live, lucky you. May in Upper Arlington, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, May.
Oh, thank you for answering my call. I have a question. I live in a very nice neighborhood, and I live in an old home.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering whether I should gut the whole home and rebuild the house or spend a lot of money remodeling it.
Well, the first question would be is, do you like your house and do you like your neighborhood?
I don't like my house, and I guess the neighborhood is very nice.
Okay. So you mean you don't like it?
I will not be living in it after it's finished.
Okay.
Because I like to sell it. I'm an empty nester.
Okay.
You know, it might be good advice to talk to an area realtor who understands home values and what people are looking for. It may be a good strategy not to get it, spend the kind of money to have it renovated and remodeled to meet today's buyer. I would talk to a realtor in the area and see what they would recommend.
Todd?
Yeah, no, I kind of agree. I mean, don't do anything crazy to the house right now until you see what you can get out of it also. You know, and I say talk to the realtor. It's a good point.
Okay, May, good luck.
Okay, thank you.
Take care. We've run out of time. I'm sorry to say we are not going to be able to get to the rest of the questions and the calls. But I want to thank Rob Vogt for coming back again. We always appreciate it. Always nice to have you guys here. Todd Helpbringer as well. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
With us today. And thanks for all the great questions from our listeners. We appreciate your participation. This, you're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.